Blog Talk Radio.
Welcome to the Backstep, where we talk about safety, survival, and other things. Welcome to the Backstep.
Well, good evening, everybody. This is Ronnie Kay in New York, and my partner Tommy A is across the United States over in Colorado. How you doing, Tom? Good evening.
Good, brother. How are you?
You know what? The fair to Midland, it's just, I can't help but thinking it's just a sad day in this country today, man. What a sad day it is for these United States. You know, when we look at terrorism and all that stuff and all the bad people from across the sea that are trying to interfere with our way of life here, and then we have a domestic terrorism incident like we had last night in Las Vegas, and it triple turns my stomach. You know, usually the terrorism stuff with the needless deaths kind of flips me upside down, but this it's three times worse for me when it's one of our own people and for no reason that anybody know of yet. I mean, I guess we'll have to wait and see how it all plays out, but just a horrible, sad day for the United States, and I don't know, man. I will tell you, if there's a silver lining on anything, everybody's talking about how the cops and the firemen did last night. They're talking about the Clark County fire and Las Vegas, City of Las Vegas fire and the Clark County sheriff's just the first response community was absolutely just staggering last night. They did a great job, you know.
I don't know whether he's going to be able to pull it off, but we were supposed to have Clark Lamping from Clark County Fire was supposed to call in and join us tonight.
Well, I got somebody calling in on a strange number, so hold on, Tommy. I'm going to go there, okay? I'm going to leave you
okay.
Out by yourself.
Oh, okay. Wonderful. How's everybody doing tonight? I hope things are good. We're looking forward to having Clark in as a guest this evening. And I wanted to talk about our sponsor for Fire Engineering Talk Radio. Our sponsor tonight is Honeywell DuPont FDIC Scholarship Program. And through this program, you have the opportunity to recommend someone to receive a scholarship to FDIC International 2008. All you need to do is go to www.honeywelldupontfdicscholarship.com. That's www.
Hey,
yes, sir.
Go ahead. HoneywellDuPontFDICScholarship.com. I got it. Listen, I do have Clark Lamping on the line. Clark Lamping is a Clark County guy. He was going to join us tonight anyway. Talk about some of the high-rise fires and the EFA systems, which we saw burning in London recently. And now on the heels of what happened in Clark County, I always call them Clark from Clark. So hang on a second. Let's get him on. Clark Lamping, welcome to the Backstep. You're on with Ronnie Kay and Tommy A. Just first and foremost, we want to let you know that the whole country is with you guys in Clark County all day and tonight. And we know it's still unfolding, and we'll give you an opportunity to chat about that before we get down to business. So it's all yours. Go ahead, buddy.
Thank you, brother. Thanks for having me on the show today. As Chief said, my name is Clark Lamping. I'm a captain with the Clark County Fire Department, I'm currently working at Station 11, which is on Las Vegas Boulevard. I'm about 500 feet from where the incident took place last night. I was not on shift. I came in shift this morning, and it was pretty tragic. Shocking, unbelievable what I saw, not even responding to the scene, but we were responding to other calls around the scene this morning as things unfolded, and we're driving up and down the streets, and I've got, in my first in area, we had bodies down, FBI around, multiple bodies around, clothing everywhere, belongings everywhere, personal belongings everywhere, sunglasses, clothing, phones, wallets. Just littering the streets and the whole surrounding area. For a minute there, I didn't know if I was in Afghanistan or if I was in the city I was born and raised in, Las Vegas. So
yeah,
it's been a pretty...
It would almost have to look like a movie set, right? Like it didn't look
absolutely.
Real. Was it surreal? Yeah.
Chief, we're responding to calls, and we are literally swerving around bodies that are in the street. Down.
No kidding. Gee whiz.
Yeah, guys
how,
got
how
hit.
Long
people
did
got
it,
hit and ran off the property trying to evacuate and
died
elsewhere.
I didn't even think of that, that people were just running crazy in the streets and getting hit by cars and stuff. I didn't even think of that. Holy
yeah, well,
wow.
we didn't have anyone, we didn't have any auto peds that we know of, but people were shot, and then they're just running, and they just bled out and dropped dead where they were.
Oh, gotcha.
Clark,
okay.
I was up on Statter's website here just a little bit ago, and he's reporting that one of the Metro police officers was killed, and two LAFD firefighters were apparently wounded during the melee. I just wanted to check to see, hopefully you guys are okay. No injuries to anybody in the department?
Zero injuries, sir. One minor injury from one of our battalion chiefs who was attending the concert off duty, and apparently I cannot confirm this, but he cut his hand jumping a fence. That's the only minor injury he had. No responding firefighters were injured, which was, you know, considering what was going on, it's absolutely amazing because that shooting went on for 15 minutes. It was 10 to 15 minutes of gunfire before they isolated that shooter. So we did have a couple family members of firefighters that were hurt. One was critically hurt. She was shot in the spine, and it looks like her life will be permanently altered, young girl.
Wow.
So that's a firefighter's daughter that was out there. And, yes, one confirmed one off-duty police officer who was attending the concert was fatally wounded, and we had two police officers on duty that were wounded.
I still can't fathom it. It just blows my mind that somebody would do that. And I guess it's all part of the world we live in now. But, you know, thank God to you and the rest of the members of the department. I'm hearing nothing but good things on the social media and the fire websites that things from an operational standpoint seem to go fairly well.
Yeah, absolutely, Chief. About 10 years ago, I mean the administration of Clark County, realized that we have a definite threat, not only in Clark County, Las Vegas, but across the country. This mass shooters, it's not a matter of if, it's a matter of when. And our ticket came up last night. So about 10 years ago, we started devising a plan with Metropolitan Police Department and ourselves to create teams that would actively go in during a situation. We are paired up with Metro officers who have force protection, and then the EMTs will follow directly behind police department, and we will quickly assess, call in needs, and transfer injured victims out, and then treat them and get them out as the incident is actually unfolding, which is what we did, last night. We had guys, I'm getting a call right now. I hope the guys are going to pick it up for me. But we had crews going interior of hotels, providing EMS while the shooter was still active. And, you know, 10 years ago, that would have been absolutely unheard of. Kind of what we did in Columbine, we would have stood back and we would have waited until the scene was clear before we even set foot in the scene. We do no more of that. Really progressive department.
I saw on the news, on all the footage, there were guys in helmets and ballistic vests, and on the front and back it said Fire Med. Are those your guys?
Those are our guys, absolutely. We had received a grant,
guys.
And every firefighter on scene has provided a vest with a plate and a Kevlar helmet.
Well, I got to tell you that the news and all the consultants that they're bringing on, you know, retired FBI guys and retired cops and this and that. They had a couple of fire guys on who I didn't know, but everybody's raving about the response of the police and the fire department in Clark County. So it, as bad as this was, it appears that you guys, everybody was well prepared and seemed to do the job that everybody kind of expects us to do. You know, people dial 911 and they expect us to come and get in between them and their problem, make their problems go away. And you guys seem to have done that last night in high fashion. I did hear something today on the national news, and maybe you could confirm or deny, but they said that they were able to pinpoint where this guy was. He shot off so many rounds. There was so much powder smoke in the room. It set off the smoke detector in the room, and it came into the panel. Did you hear anything about that?
I heard that on the news, Chief. I did not hear that from the responding crews. Now, what did happen
right,
is okay. when they set off the charge to blow the door, when the police set off the charge to blow the door, that set off hallway detectors, and then we actually started a full response on top of all the other shit that was going on. They initiated a full high-rise response to the Mandalay
wow.
Bay. Yeah, you know what we don't need at this point is that. So immediately,
yeah, right.
Command Metro on scene, the police department that was in that hallway said, cancel, cancel, cancel. That was us. There is no fire.
Right.
So, yeah.
How were your guy? Basically, when you did shift relief this morning, did the department provide some CISD or something similar to that? Because the guys that were out there and seeing all that, they had to be affected by that, I'm sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I've got A platoon was on, and we relieved A platoon this morning. And A platoon at Station 11 is a bunch of heavy hitters. We got some strong men that I'd work with any day. And I saw some faces and some looks and some eyes today that was really disturbing to me.
I bet.
But yeah, we did have a mandatory after action report at our training center. Every single person on scene was required to report and just sit and talk.
Good.
And in the union hall. We have a union meeting tonight, and the union hall is going to be open. I'm not sure that they're going to bring anyone in to talk to people, but just open up a couple beers and sit around and have a conversation with these guys.
Well, like I said, the whole country's with you guys, and of course, you know, and you did us very, very proud. I mean, people are talking about, like I said, the fire and police response to this thing, and the cops got there pretty quick, and they went up to neutralize this guy. Obviously, he killed himself, but that everyone's talking about the response. So you guys made all of us look good once again, you know, and I know the president talked about it very briefly today and talked about the first responders, and he's a fan of first responders to start with, this guy, so... I think it just it kind of seals the deal for everybody. So,
and you know what, Chief,
we've got
a great fire chief. Greg Castle's our fire chief, very, very progressive, forward thinking, and he's the one that initiated this training, and he's the one that established the partnership with the police department, and we couldn't be happy with our administration right now. I know a lot of guys across the country don't have those feelings towards their fire chief, but I got to tell you, in Clark County. We've got a great guy running this ship.
Great. And you know what? You know what? The kudos to him also for forging those relationships. I'm fortunate. I have an excellent relationship with my police chief in town. And there's not an administration in the country. There's not a city council or a town council that ever wants to see the police and fire chief walking up the aisle together arm in arm coming at them. For them, it's divide and conquer. You know,
yeah.
And when you could join forces, when all the uniform forces can join forces in a town, city, or jurisdiction, it makes things a little bit better and strengthen numbers and all that other stuff. You know, so
absolutely. The command post last night was unbelievable. The unified command we had established. We had a couple battalion chiefs on our side, Eric Pileski and Leo Durkin. Phenomenal. You listen to the radio traffic, and I'm sure the radio traffic come out. These guys are talking to each other. They're talking to crews just like they're sitting at the kitchen table with their wife having dinner. They're that calm. They're that controlled. And we've got crews. We've got team. At one point, Chiefs, we were getting reports that there was active shooters up and down, clear 3 miles up Las Vegas Boulevard.
Jeez.
And some of the things that were happening were these guys, like I said, people were getting hit, and they're going back to their hotels. They're just running. And we had people run into the Tropicana Hotel, which is a couple blocks to the north. So they run in and they get into the lobby of the Tropicana Hotel. They're shot up. They're bleeding. Tropicana Hotel calls 911 and says, hey, we got gunshot victims here at the Tropicana Hotel. Well, that gets translated to, we've got an active shooter at the Tropicana Hotel.
Right.
And then
right.
Same thing, New York Hotel, MGM Hotel, Monte Carlo Hotel,
wow.
Paris, Bally's Hotel. We had reports all up and down Las Vegas Boulevard of active shooters. Yeah, and they just kept going, canceling. Can we get confirmation on that? Contact the security. Do we get video? Give me confirmation before we deploy these resources to your hotel. At one point, we thought we had 16 active shooters in Las Vegas.
Wow. Oh,
yeah,
man.
So, yeah, it was easily the biggest geographical incident that we've ever had here in Clark County. Unlike, you know, sometimes they have the nightclub shootings where you're in one building, right?
Right.
Like I mean, we had multiple hotels. We were still kicking bushes. We were driving around today, you know, seeing Metro Police Department. They're walking through bushes looking for bodies, you know, remote, you know, half a block away, two blocks away. They just got their flashlights. They're you know, going through shit looking for stuff. Inside the venue, too, we had to go inside the venue today, this morning, because all the food trucks were still running. All the people just ran out. So we had food trucks running. We still had food on the grill. Hot plates were still on, so we had to go with the safety officer, and we had to go and start shutting down all these food trucks and cooking things. So we were interior, and unbelievable what was going on inside. Unbelievable the carnage inside the actual – they call it the village. It's called the MGM Village with the carnival grounds that this place was. Yeah, surreal. Like time stopped. It was like time stopped. We're walking up and down.
Yeah, I bet it did.
Yeah. No, they didn't take any of the bodies out. All the bodies were still there. I guess they're having – FBI was saying they're having some guys come in from Quantico. Quantico, Virginia, FBI is coming in, and they're going to do trajectory research on where these people were standing, where the bullets came from. So they left all the bodies where they were. But we're walking through this facility, and you're just hearing cell phones ring. Cell phones and people ringing. You know,
wow.
Just, yeah, it is absolutely surreal. Wallets, you know – phones on the ground, wallets on the ground, cash registers tipped over, money just blown all over the place, full bar set up, shops, you know, purses, shoes, because it's a big country festival, so they're selling leather goods and cowboy goods and all this stuff, you know, boxes of shoes laying down there, blood everywhere, every single place we looked, there was blood, every place we looked, blood.
Wow.
Yeah. Another thing that happened, too, we have that festival ground backs up to McCarran Airport, our international airport. And just by bad luck, that's where the fuel farm is. So we've got multiple containers of 46,000 barrel containers of jet fuel. And last night they discovered they had a pressure difference in one of the containers. So we responded. First thing this morning, we responded out there. And he had it done accidentally, because if he knew that was sitting there, I personally would have concentrated all my fire on those. But he did have two bullets hit a full 46,000 barrel container of aviation fuel at the airport.
Wow.
Yeah. Yep. So, and then, so we're walking down, you have to go through a desert lot across, right across the street from where the incident was, on the opposite of the strip side, a street called Reno. Across Reno, there's a church. They used the church parking lot was the command post, and that's where the MCI unit was set up. And just behind that, there's a dirt lot, and then you're into the airport. We're walking through the dirt lot trying to get eyes on this jet fuel, and even in this dirt lot, there's blood everywhere. I felt like I was tracking a deer. You just see blood tracking. You see track stops, and there's a big puddle of blood right there. And just carry on, keep moving on. Again, personal belongings everywhere. It was unbelievable. Still, it's still unbelievable.
Yeah, I'm sure it is, and I think now more than ever, it's important for the guys in Clark County, yourself included, and law enforcement, to make sure that you're sitting and talking about this stuff with professionals. So you can keep your heads on straight and keep your head in the game. It's important. And sometimes stuff like this doesn't hit you for, it could be a week from now, it could be 6 months, you know. So you guys have to be on the lookout for each other to check for those signs of behavioral changes. And then whoever needs it, get them into some professional stuff, because that's all the stuff we've been talking about lately is behavioral health and you know what. And the well-being of our firefighters, you know, when they see bad stuff or something bad happens to a guy or whatever. So now's the time to put that stuff to work. And there's plenty of resources out there for Clark County and everybody else who may be listening across the country to just get in touch with the professionals. But I'd like to, if I can, Clark, if it's all, with your permission, I'd like to switch gears a little bit.
Absolutely.
Hey, I got to tell the story, Ron.
What's that?
I'm
there.
I'm here. We're here.
I got to tell the story. Ron and I, of course, you know, Fire Engineering pays us a tremendous amount of money to get on here and basically bullshit for an hour. I think if you doubled my salary right now, it'd still be zero. But
two times zero is still zero. That's right, still zero.
But we got talking about some of the recent high-rise fires. I can't remember if it was Ron and I mentioned the Monte Carlo fire, and Clark reached out to me because of the tremendous amount of research that he had done on that and other incidents. And it turns out, believe it or not, Ron and I were talking out our ass, saying about how the fire didn't extend into the structure, and it did. Clark presented last year at FDIC, did a session on expanded polystyrene products and their effect on fire behavior and extinguishment. And I'm embarrassed to say, Clark, I didn't come see your lecture, but I'm hoping you could at least provide some highlights into the research you've done and some info on the Monte Carlo fire that would certainly be of interest to the listeners.
Yeah, absolutely.
Don't feel bad, Chief, because
there's only two of us in the class, and the other guy was my brother-in-law. So, but
he said
it was the best class he's ever had.
Right, and you didn't come to mind, Clark, so I don't feel bad either. You know what I'm saying?
All right.
you didn't come to mind. But I think a side
Clark,
note, Clark and I were in touch with each other quite a few years ago. I think it was through the Alumni Association, through the National Fire Academy. Is that right? Am I remembering that right, Clark?
That could have been.
Yep,
and we
corresponded by email for quite a long time. And I said, he introduced himself. And I said, oh, a guy named Clark from Clark. How interesting is that?
Yeah.
And all these years later, as soon as Tommy said to me, hey, you know this guy Clark Lamping? I said, yeah, we met a long time ago, never face-to-face, but we actually met a long time ago online through the National Fire Academy and all that stuff. So we're glad to have you on the show. We were talking about last time, Clark, what kicked off the conversation was, it was 2 months ago, was the high-rise job in London and the EFIS systems that are out there, and we know that they're using them everywhere. So with that, Tommy mentioned that you called, and we'd love to have your perspective. Guys that are listening, firefighters, guys and gals, if you remember the recent high-rise fire in London, and then there's been a couple of them, and one of them was the Monte Carlo in Vegas a couple of years back, where the facade burned pretty well, and it's a system of insulating the building and doing nice decoration sometimes at the same time. But if they're not done the right way, you end up with a Monte Carlo or with a London high-rise job. So, Clark Lamping from Clark County, Nevada, we're gonna turn it over to you for a couple minutes.
Yeah. So, EFIS systems, I know across the country, especially out here in the West and the Southwest, very very popular exterior cladding. It is lightweight, it's cheap, and it is easy to install. And those two characters I look for in women: cheap and easy. but it's really easy to use. And what it is, it's a couple inches of polystyrene foam, and they put a mesh on it, maybe a fiberglass mesh, and then they put stucco over top of it. And the stucco can be a 16-inch thick, and that's it. And they simply make these panels, and they stick them right on the side of exterior structures. And in Las Vegas, you go down and you look at the Monte Carlo Hotel. You go by and you look at Caesar's Palace. On Caesar's Palace's high rise, it's a 40-story high rise. On the very top, they have these columns, these Roman columns. And you may think, looking at them, that these are hand carved marble columns imported from Rome, but you would be wrong. It's all this decorative styrofoam is all it is. Styrofoam with a thin layer of stucco on it. And so what happened on the Monte Carlo fire, they had some workers that were on the roof, and they were using a torch. They were making a walkway, a metal walkway. They were cutting a torch, and some of the slag dropped off the metal and landed on this EFIS. And it immediately burned through the stucco into the burned into the polystyrene and started burning throughout the polystyrene behind the stucco. So the workers immediately got their fire extinguisher shot and hit it with the fire extinguisher, thought they didn't have a problem, no problem. And then what was going on is this fire was inside the polystyrene, and it burned up the back of the parapet and then down the front of the parapet. And once it reached the front of the parapet, it started traveling in two different directions. So started burning, and this stuff melts. It burns hot, and it drips down, and it melts. So as this product was burning, it melted, and on the 32nd floor of the Monte Carlo Hotel, that's a row of suites, and underneath that row of suites on the exterior of the building, there's a decorative ledge. It's about 16 inches wide. And just by luck, that burning ephis from the parapet dropped down and landed right on top of that decorative trim. And it stuck, and started burning that, and then started burning on both directions in that material, and that's when it auto-exposed into the suites on the 32nd floor. And
I wasn't aware. The fire got into the building. I wasn't aware.
Yeah, absolutely. By the end of the fire chief, we had, I think, 12 rooms on the 32nd floor. We had one room on the 31st floor, one room on the 30th floor, and about another 15 rooms on the 29th floor. And the reason for that, Chief, is because there is another decorative ledge underneath the 29th floor. So as the decorative ledge on the 32nd floor was burning and auto-exposing into the 32nd floor, that was also melting, and it dropped down and landed on the ledge that was on the 29th floor and did the same thing, started burning, and also was burning in both directions. So we had fire on 32 on two different wings of the hotel. We had one room on the 31st floor, one room on the 30th floor, and then about 15 rooms on the 29th floor that were involved, again, burning in two different directions in two different wings. And they also had some material dropped down.
When the fire made its way into the rooms, I'm going to make a big assumption. Yeah, that's a fully sprinkled building, correct?
Fully sprinkled building constructed in 1994. Fully sprinkled up to the most recent building codes.
Sprinklers went off and kept it in those rooms, correct?
Yeah, kept it in those rooms. Kept it in those rooms.
Okay.
But when the crews were going through opening doors, they didn't have any heat signature. They were looking with the ticks. They didn't have any heat signature because there was cold smoke. The sprinklers cooled down all the smoke. So they're just forcing doors. And for the first little bit, the guys didn't even know. The guys who were interior on Division 32 didn't even know they had fire inside the building. They were still under the assumption that it was a roof fire until they forced a door, and then, boom, filled the whole hallway with smoke. And that's when they started going room to room to room, overhauling these rooms. We had so many hose lines in so many different locations in that hotel from two different – it was in two different wings. It was a massive, massive fire. One of the hardest firefights we've ever had in Clark County.
Well, interestingly enough, the article that I read about the Monte Carlo at the time was not like a fire engineering type article. It was written up, I think, in one of the NFPA magazines or one of the sprinkler industry. So it didn't.
Okay.
It didn't discuss the manual firefight at all, and that's why, you know, everything you're saying now, I'm hearing it for the first time, you know, and I'm kind of a student of large fires, and I've been teaching fire science for 28 years, and I use these fires in my classroom, and this is the first really I'm hearing about the firefight, because the article that I had was not, it didn't come from the fire service, you know.
Right, yeah, and it was... 100 firemen fought that fire from all four agencies. We have, you know, here in the Las Vegas Valley, we have the City of Henderson Fire Department, we have the City of Las Vegas Fire Department, City of North Las Vegas Fire Department, and the Clark County Fire Department. We all have mutual aid. All three of the departments have automatic mutual aid. Henderson has regular mutual aid. But we come together regularly in these large incidents. And, again, back to the shooting last night, all four agencies responded. We had 108 firefighters on scene from all four agencies. So I just had to throw a shout-out to Las Vegas, North Las Vegas, and Henderson. But the Monte Carlo, same thing. Same thing. We had firefighters from all four agencies on that fire. And, fires. As they were walking up, we had car fires. We had palm trees on fires because this stuff burns. And it melts off like spider webs, and it's flying through the air in the wind. And the guy said it was like burning spider webs. And a funny story, two of my guys here at my station, they're walking up to the fire. They get an assignment. They're walking into the building, and the guy in the back, he sees one of these spider webs land on the firefighter right across his helmet. It's on fire. And he says, hey, Tony, Your head's on fire. Tony turns around and looks at Ward, and he says, Ward's covered in it. His shoulders are on fire. His helmet's on fire. His bottle's on fire. He's covered in this stuff. Yeah.
Wow. Well, we always call the polystyrene, the polyurethane, we call it, it's solid gasoline. I mean, it's, you know, that's what you call it. That's what it is.
Yeah, absolutely.
So let me ask you something a little bit more technical about EFIS. What are the issues? Does this happen when it's installed incorrectly? Does it happen no matter what because it's just the nature of the beast? Or, you know, how is the industry not looking at this? And how is the building code people not look? How are the building code people not looking at this? Or what's the, do you have, are there any answers at this point?
As far as the installation of it, Chief, I believe most of it is installed correctly. They do put a pretty thin layer of stucco on it, a 16th of an inch of stucco. You know, you can walk up and push your thumb right through the stucco and be into the polystyrene just like that. The problem we're seeing is when the polystyrene reaches an ignition source. We had another fire in a bar, a one-story bar, in my first in, and they had a big neon sign on the parapet of the bar, like bars do. Well, the building was EFIS. All the exterior was EFIS, and they had electricity running through the EFIS powering the neon sign, the logo. And they had some kind of an electrical failure in the neon sign, caused the sign to start burning, and it burned through into the EFIS system and caught the whole outside of the bar on fire. Fortunately for everyone involved, it was right on a main road, so immediately notification, people driving by in the work in the morning at 7 in the morning called in multiple callers, hey, your bar is on fire. And second of all, it was a one-story building, so we could reach it with ground lines. So that's why we were really successful in extinguishing that fire quickly before it got into the bar. But it's incidents like that. There's another incident that happened in Florida, a Friendly's Ice Cream. I've got pictures of it. A good friend of mine, Bill Gustin from Miami-Dade, sent me pictures of this. They had a Friendly ice cream parlor. Someone threw a cigarette into the planter, the mulch, and it smoldered, and then the mulch eventually ignited the underside of the EFIS, the foam, and burned. And it's an interesting, I've got a couple pictures of the fire. First fire, fairly advanced fire. Second picture, and I don't know how long after the second picture was taken, the second picture shows the whole entire building is involved, except for one window, and there's not one single apparatus on scene yet. Not one apparatus on scene. So that tells you how quickly this stuff takes off.
But by the way, Clark, you made history by telling everybody just now on the radio that you're friends with Bill Gustin. I think you're the only one who ever admitted to that.
Oh, yeah.
We love you, Billy, if you're listening to this. We love you, pal.
Oh, yeah,
I know
great
a long
man.
Time, but, yeah,
great,
he's a great guy.
Man,
he's
yeah.
loaded with knowledge. He's loaded with knowledge. He's, you know, his head's going to explode one day, you know, and little fire trucks are going to pop out, you know.
Good man, too. Good man. For one of the first people to call
there,
me this morning.
Yep, I bet. So is there anything that you presented at FDIC on this subject or on the polystyrene that you think is prudent for our audiences to know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Know that's out there. Brothers, it is out. Brothers and sisters, it is out there. And if you don't think it's in your first in, maybe you don't have a 50, 60-story high-rise in your first in. Maybe you don't have Las Vegas-style casinos in your first in. But if you have strip malls, if you have Taco Bells, if you have office complexes, you've got this material in your first in. I guarantee it. I do a little work in Florida, Pensacola, Florida, with Kurt Isaacson at his conference. And I'm driving around Pensacola on my way to teach this stuff, and I'm looking building after building after building is loaded with this stuff. So it's East Coast to West Coast, North to South. Just be aware that you will have a fast-moving advanced fire. And you will need to do extensive overhaul because this stuff will burn behind the stucco layer, and you need to get ahead of it and cut it off. Now, they've been using, not EFIS, but they've been using polystyrene and polyurethane and polyisocyanurate, which is another poly product. They've been using this material on roofs for many years, many years. And in Clark County, we've had multiple roof fires with this material because the AC units are on the roof. We had a mid-rise, an eight-story mid-rise hotel in my first in, had an AC unit on the roof, had an electrical failure, started the electrical system on fire, and dropped down onto the waterproof membrane, which is a rubber membrane, immediately burned through the rubber membrane, into the it was this one was a polyisocyanurate. It had a top layer of polyisocyanurate and then 3 inches of polystyrene underneath it, and immediately started burning this. First in truck 11, he got to the roof, looked over the parapet, and he said he was watching this fire expand like gasoline.
Now, are they using that for insulation?
Insulation, yes. They're using that for insulation.
Yeah.
Yep.
Yeah.
So, and you could have as many as, I've got pictures of buildings, 12 inches. 12 inches of styrene foam on rooftops.
Wow, a whole foot of that.
Yep.
Damn, you never stop it. You almost got to go to foam operations. Right?
Yeah. You know what? We do
like
roof,
foam,
we do trench. Yeah, when you show up on one of these, and the good news is it goes out immediately. All you have to do is cool it. Hit it with a little bit of water, but then 6-7 hours of overhaul because you're using shovels, you're using axes, you're using chainsaws. You got to trench the whole roof and just keep cutting until you find a spot where the fire has not extended. Piles and piles of stuff. I've got pictures of these guys on a roof. They're getting their asses kicked. They're in full gear. They are completely whooped, and they are standing in piles, 6-foot-tall piles of this material. They keep peeling off the roof, looking for this extension.
Wow.
Oh, Tom, you still there?
Yeah, I'm just hanging, listening.
Which one of you chiefs
out a lot in the middle, you know?
Yeah. Which one of you chiefs recommended that book, The Killer Show?
That was me.
Actually, Ron read it before I did.
Yeah, I picked that book up on your recommendation, Chief. Fantastic book.
I told you.
Yep.
Yep. I read it. Somebody, I don't know who recommended it to me. Now I was when that fire happened in 2003. I was still in New Jersey, but I went out to Eastern Connecticut near the Rhode Island line, and I worked out there for 5 years, and it was still always a hot topic. And I worked in the casino environment for 5 years, so. Somebody just said, hey, Bev, did you ever read that book? You know, and I read it, and I got in touch with the author. I called John Barolick. I said, you need to come to Connecticut and talk to the chiefs and the fire marshals. And I had him in for a half a day, and he addressed 140 of us and told us all about it over a three-hour period. And to me, it was the best accounting of a fire before the fire, how what I call the dominoes of death lined up for those people. And then the fire investigation afterwards. I thought it was just the perfect accounting of a historical fire that I've seen. And boy, if we can't learn lessons from that, and I recommend it to everybody, especially in the fire prevention and the fire marshal area. You know, I always tell guys, if you read that book and it doesn't make you want to do your job better, then get out of the job altogether. You know what I'm saying?
Oh, absolutely. I couldn't agree more with you, Chief. Again, just. It was a book for. It was written by a lawyer. The author was a lawyer who prosecuted and got all the money for the victims. But the way he presented the book, the amount of research he did in fire behavior, in ventilation, in building construction, building layout, occupancy types, and an extensive chapter on the foam they used, the polyurethane foam and polystyrene foam that was in that building. And he has extensive literature on why that product was there, how it was installed, where they bought it from, why they installed it, how they installed it, and how that product performed, how it was allowed to be put on those walls. The testing procedure with
you remember, I mean, he most of the people that were in the club that night, he told you who they were and how they got their tickets, you know? And,
yeah.
The guy from the band, he checked into the hotel and he ran into the chambermaid and she recognized him and he threw her tickets, you know, and she went and never came out. So it was just the amount of research that went into the whole story is just compelling. You know, the interesting thing about the book, I thought, Clark, was we all know how the story ends. And yet I was turning pages so fast. I killed the book in 2 nights. You know, it was like reading a John Grisham novel, you know.
I agree.
It's just really, really well done. Really. And for the guys that are listening, the guys and gals that may be listening, the book's called Killer Show. It's about the Station nightclub in West Warwick, Rhode Island fire. 100 people got killed, and highly recommended for fire prevention and fire marshal type folks. But anybody in the fire service, you should read that book because it'll make you sit up and take notice and pay attention when you're walking around. Just maybe socially going to a club or a bar or something, and or if you're working it professionally. But I thought it was very compelling. I thought the whole story was very compelling.
Yeah. And it makes me look at buildings differently now. It makes me differently now.
Sure.
Act differently. I go to a club. I go to a bar. And I think a couple months ago, Chase Sargent had an article in Fire Engineering a couple months ago. Great article about situational awareness. And when he walks into a bar, when he walks into a restaurant, when he walks into a movie theater, he assesses the situation. He identifies his exits. He sits with his face to the door and immediately starts formulating a plan. As soon as he walks in, he's at an ice cream parlor with his kids, and they're ordering ice cream, and he's formulating an escape plan in case there's active shooter or a fire in the building. That's how this man thinks. And after reading that book, Killer Show,
I hate to be a geek. I do the same thing. I still, even today, I check into a hotel. I go check the exits. I look in the stairwells to make sure they're clear. I count the number of doors between my room and the exit door. I still do it. I still do. I've been doing it for my whole life. You know.
So, Ron, I got to tell you a story. I'm in Vegas, and I'm at Planet Hollywood, and we're in kind of the mall there, and there's a theater. My wife and I were going to the show that apparently they oversold tickets for, and they started setting up chairs on the aisles going up to the seating. And my wife looked at me, and she said, "You're going to have to do this, aren't you?" And I said, "Yeah, I certainly am.
Yeah, I'm going to have to."
The folks there at the theater, and it was over Thanksgiving. I don't think I could have gotten anybody on the phone from the fire marshal's office, but I certainly expressed my displeasure as to what I was seeing going on there. Clark, I got to tell you, I've had a timeshare in Vegas for years, but listening to you today, I'm going to have a different look every time I drive down the strip of exactly what I'm seeing.
Absolutely. When are you coming out again? You come out every year?
Yeah, I'll be out. I think we're coming out in November.
November, no kidding. I'll tell you what, Chief, you get a hold of me, I'll take you up to the roof of the Monte Carlo. We'll walk the property. I'll show you exactly what happened.
Wow, that's way cool.
Yeah. Yeah, but absolutely. I'd love to give you a tour. I'd love to show you what I'm talking about. Not just, like I said, not just high-rise, all these strip malls. You guys seen this roof cap, right? You see the decorative roof cap? They take a concrete tilt-up building, and they put this cap on it. And that cap, most of the time, sometimes it's framed. If it's a wood frame building, there's a slight chance that decorative cap would be a wood frame, a OSB frame. Most of the time, it's polystyrene sprayed with stucco. And it is so easy to produce and so cheap. You know, the building architect and the engineer, they just say, okay, here's the profile we want, and here's how many lineal feet we want, all right? They send that off. We've got a shop in Arizona that makes this stuff. They cut it for them. They blow stucco on it, and they deliver it right to the job site and set it there. Now, this product is not structurally fastened to the building at all. They glue it, and it is just simply glued onto the top of the building, and they stucco the rest of the building to match. Right, so it's nothing strong, and I've seen some of these things 36 inches wide on the rooftop with no covering. I'm no OSB, no metal flashing or anything on it. Now, I have a truck company here. I'm a truck captain. This is extremely concerning to me. When I'm pulling up to a commercial structure fire, I cannot wait to get on scene and get eyes on this material to see if I have this material. Because imagine this, if you put a ladder against this material and a firefighter with full gear on is, what, 300, 325 pounds, all right? He steps foot on that material that's glued to the side of the building. What's going to happen?
He's going down.
Right. Coming right
He's
up.
Going down, exactly. So I'm very, very aware of where I put my ladder, and a lot of guys aren't. A lot of guys have no idea what they're standing on. They have no idea what they're up against.
Is there any kind of marking system in the code that would give a heads up to the fire service that this is what it's like? We, you know, in New Jersey, they did the truss roof signs after the Hackensack fire in '88. You know, it's a triangle with an R or an F in it. It tells you that it's truss. Are they doing anything like that for this construction?
No, absolutely not. Absolutely not. No. You can assume if you see decorative material in a building that is polystyrene and it's simply glued on there. It's simply glued on there. So my advice to any truck captains out there, if you see this stuff, check out your Charlie side. The majority of the time, the building is not going to spend the extra money to decorate the back alley. Right?
Right,
they're just going to have it on the three sides. So I'm shooting for the Charlie side. As soon as I see this material, I'm thinking we're going Charlie on the truck. I want to access the roof from the Charlie side. And even my guys are aware of it. We train on it, but still, you know, you have to get off the
roof
quickly.
Is it just the perimeter of the roof, or they're making the whole roof out of this shit?
Well, usually we find it on concrete tilt-ups. So the concrete tilt-up will have this on the perimeter, but then the roofing material, the insulation, the roofing material will probably be polystyrene again, or polyisocyanurate.
Okay. Gotcha. Gotcha.
So,
wow.
Yeah, very dangerous
Tommy,
stuff.
Tommy, you're never too old to learn. Here I am, 43 years in the biz, and I'm learning tonight.
Yeah. There's going to be a good class at FDIC this year. I think one of my problems I had, Chief, was class title was not nearly sexy enough. So this year, that same class is called Fighting Fire in an Age of Plastic and Foams. This is not your grandfather's firefight. So,
now you're talking.
Yeah,
you're
see,
talking.
A little more sexy,
titles.
Right? A little more sexy.
Yeah,
Mark, I got to tell you, the first year I taught at FDIC, I was on opposite Chief Brunicini in the big room.
Uh-huh.
So the five people that couldn't get in to see him came to see me.
Yeah, pretty good.
Yep.
So are you confirmed to teach next year, Clark?
Yes, sir. Yes, sir.
Okay, good. Yeah, I'm doing a workshop on Monday afternoon myself.
What's your title, Chief?
I'm doing I call it safety leadership. It's firehouse to the fire ground, and I currently have a book in with Penwell on occupational safety and health. So it's based on kind of on the book, and they're supposed to release that at FDIC. I'm hoping to have the big splash at the conference. That's what we're looking
good
at.
Good for you, brother. Good for
yeah,
you.
Yeah, man. Thanks.
Clark, I see that you are involved with Nevada's Task Force 1.
Yes.
Did you get deployed at all?
Yes. We went to Irma. We went to Irma. Last month, unfortunately, well, you know, we did what we were told to do. We responded. We drove out there, and we ended up in Robins Air Force Base, which is just southeast of Atlanta. And we staged there. We had Pennsylvania, Tennessee, Washington, and ourselves staged there. We staged there for about 5 or 6 days, and they released us. They released us. We were too far remote to do any work. Apparently, there were several teams in Carolina. There were several teams in Orlando and down other teams all the way down in Florida. And as that hurricane passed over, the teams moved in, and it was determined it was not as severe as they expected it to be. And a lot of people heeded warnings and evacuated. So they did not need any of the teams that were staged in Georgia. So we put our tail between our legs and we went home.
Gotcha.
Well,
but it was a good deployment drill. It was a good deployment drill. We got out of the door like we should. You know, you learn something every single day. In fact, we have the after-action report, review on that tomorrow. We're all showing up for that. But it was a good drill. It was a good drill. Had a bunch of young guys.
Listen, if for nothing else, you got together with three other teams and you guys can sit and compare notes, you know, and talk about what you do and how you do it. So it's never wasted if you don't want it to be wasted, you know?
Yeah. Yeah. I don't know if you guys have ever been through a hurricane, but that it went to a tropical storm and it passed directly over us. That eye passed directly over Robins Air Force Base. And when it hit us, it had 70-mile-an-hour winds and rain like I have never experienced before in my life.
I'm sure you haven't.
Oh, my God. I tell you what, we're sitting out there, and we're staying in this airplane hangar, right? And the airplane hangar, it looks like it was designed to hold about 25 people. Well, there's 300 of us in there. So the first 12 hours, we ruined all the plumbing in the place, right? Not a chance. So they put all these porta-potties out. We had porta-potties out there. And then the storm moves through and it blew all the goddamn porta-potties away. So they had to go down the street and pick up the porta-potties and bring them back. Oh yeah, just unbelievable. On trees down. That was an experience for me too.
We got to take 2 seconds here. I'm sorry, Clark. We just got to take 2 seconds here and thank the sponsors. We have big sponsorship here. Honeywell DuPont has an FDIC scholarship program. If you want to nominate someone to go to FDIC 2018, go to their website at HoneywellDuPontFDICScholarship.com. That's HoneywellDuPontFDICScholarship.com. It's a neat scholarship, guys. It's a full boat, registration, travel, the whole bit to FDIC. So I want to thank Honeywell DuPont for their support of FDIC and Fire Engineering. So that's a little plug
Clark,
that we do for our sponsors.
Clark, I don't want to run you off. I know Ron and I got a couple things we're going to cover real quick. You're more than welcome to stay on with us. But from the bottom of my heart, thanks for coming on. Great subject. I look forward to seeing you at FDIC next year.
Absolutely, brother. It was my pleasure. Thanks for inviting me. Thanks for inviting me.
Yep. Well, at FDIC, Tommy, or on the roof of the Monte Carlo in November, whatever comes first.
I'm in.
Yeah, I've got a policy.
You're already
Any
there.
Fireman comes to Vegas, I buy the beer. That's my policy.
Yeah.
Don't spread that. Are we on the air right now? I should broadcast.
Yes, we are.
I'll be out of money.
Yeah.
I'll be out of money in a month.
Yeah.
Guys come through Vegas.
Guys, that was Captain Lamping, L-A-M-P-I-N-G, Captain Lamping from Clark County. And there
no,
you go.
Seriously, before
you
guys
you better work
started,
some overtime.
Yeah.
You better
yeah,
work a little
come
overtime.
By. Anyone who comes by Las Vegas, like I said, I'm just south of the Mandalay Bay, right on Las Vegas Boulevard. I'm looking at the Welcome to Las Vegas sign. I love it when guys come by. I'm so proud of my station. I'm proud of my equipment. I'm proud of my men. I love having brothers come by. I love showing them around. I love sitting talking to them, give them a cup of coffee, and give them a sandwich if they want. So please, anyone's ever in the area, please look me up. I'd love to meet you.
Hey, I want you to keep working on that mustache. You're almost where you need to be.
No, it's good. You should see it. You should see it. It's I take my Movember very, very seriously. Very seriously.
It looks like mine, except mine's a different color now.
Oh, great. So I'm gonna stay on the line while you guys carry on, all right, if you don't mind. I'll inject
Absolutely.
My 2 cents
yep.
every chance I get.
Yep. Yeah, we got about 10 minutes
Ron,
to go, and then we hit it. Go ahead, Tom.
I'm sure you saw the article on the death of a fire service icon. Billy G posted up on the deal. Lou Amabile served with the, I know I'm going to screw this up, Hawkinson Fire Company since 1947 in Delaware. And what a resume this gentleman had from, like, the beginning. First director of the Delaware Fire School. In 1970, was appointed to the National Commission for Fire Prevention and Control. And for those of you who don't know it, that's the group that came out with the landmark document in 1974 called America Burning. Ron, I know you've had a chance to study that document as much as I did, and it changed the face of the American Fire Service back in the mid-70s.
It did.
That
was my first textbook in college. I was a freshman in 74, and America Burning just came out, and that was the book we had to buy. And I met Lou in 89 at the Delaware Fire Academy and saw him subsequently over the years. Just other than being brilliant, he was just the nicest man you ever met in your whole life. Really nice guy.
Past president of the International Society of Fire Service Instructors, National Fire Academy Board of Visitors, Board of Directors for the Congressional Fire Service Institute. Left some huge, huge shoes to be filled, but certainly wanted to mention his passing. And to those that don't know, you can go up on the firefighterclosecalls.com. The write-up on this has a interview that was done by Fire Engineering with Lou, and it is definitely worth the look.
I couldn't agree with you more, Tommy. Amabile was definitely an icon and a pioneer in the fire service, and a lot of guys, even the last 10 or 15 years, I haven't heard his name out there at all. You know, I knew of him because I met him and because of America Burning. But guys and gals, if you're listening now, take a look at Lou Amabile's history, because he's one of the guys that made it happen for us and put us where we are today. So, yeah, rest in peace, Lou. Good man. Very good man. Very good man.
Also, I wanted to throw out best wishes and a get well soon to Dennis Smith from the Fire Department of New York. For those of you who don't know Dennis Smith, in the 1970s, Dennis wrote the definitive firefighter novel, Report from Engine Company 82. When I was coming up through my hometown fire department in New Jersey, this was the book that defined what it was like to be a New York City firefighter. There's other works out there by Dennis Steely Blue, A Song for Mary that is written about his personal life, and a book that I have that I still cannot read is Report from Ground Zero. I can get maybe through the first chapter or two of that, and it becomes extremely emotional and hard to deal with. But Dennis was also the founding, I believe he was also the owner and editor of Firehouse Magazine back when that
correct.
Came out in 76.
76.
There's some info up on firefighterclosecalls.com. Dennis has no access to social media, but if you wanted to send him a snail mail, get well card, fire department patch, whatever, I would highly recommend going up there, getting the address off of firefighterclosecalls.com, and just dropping him a note and letting them know you're thinking about him.
Yep. Actually, Tommy, Report from Engine 82 really wasn't a novel. It was a true story. He wrote this is the real life stuff that happened in Engine 82 and 31 truck in the South Bronx. So he definitely a pioneer. But I agree with you. I was a kid when that came out, and I couldn't wait to get my. I still have it. My copy's in the office. The pages are actually yellowed. It's a soft cover, and the pages have yellowed. But I have my original Report from 82. Pretty cool. Pretty cool.
It's an easy read too. Easy. It's not like a typical textbook.
It reads like a
story, and it's fantastic.
Yeah, well, that's what it is. Yeah, he just told his story about being a fireman in the South Bronx. Pretty cool story. Tom, do you have the roll call for tonight?
I have the roll call.
Okay, why don't you?
Last time we were on the air was August 28th. Since then, there's been 5 line of duty deaths that have occurred. On August 31st, Gary Helming, a battalion chief with the Goleta, California Fire Department, was killed in a vehicle crash while returning from an assignment. September 10th, Terry Stampdell, a battalion chief with San Francisco, California Fire Department, died from an unknown medical at the station. September 14th, Kenneth Green Sr., a lieutenant with the Philadelphia Fire Department, also an unknown medical at the station. September 23rd, Matthew Deacher, a firefighter with Mosinee, Wisconsin Fire Department, passed away. This was from a 2003 ambulance crash that left him a paraplegic, and he passed away from complications of the injuries that he received in that accident. And September 27th, Eric Bellet, a captain with Fort Wayne, Indiana Fire Department, passed away from an unknown medical during a training exercise. As always, let's keep these guys and their families in our thoughts and prayers and heed the lessons that they left us so this does not occur again.
Thanks for the roll call, Tom. It's about time we ended up. I want to thank Captain Clark Lamping from Clark County, Nevada, getting on with us tonight. Giving us a first-hand account of what happened in Las Vegas last night and imparting his knowledge of the EFIS systems and the plastics and polys they're using on high-rise buildings. Clark, it was a pleasure to have you on. I look forward to seeing you next April or before at FDIC.
Absolutely, brothers. It was really my pleasure coming on with you guys, and I want to thank you, too, for everything you do for the fire service. You may not believe this, but I listen to every single podcast you guys put on, no matter how painful it may be. I make sure to listen to it. But
we're going to have to start talking about you, man. This way we'll just start doing shout-outs and all that stupid shit, you know.
There you go.
But thanks for coming on the show with us. We appreciate you, man. Thanks.
All right, brothers. Take care of yourselves, all right?
Yep. Give our best to the guys in Clark County. And until we're up on the back step again, be safe, slow down, buckle up, eat right, eat light, stop for red, and use your head. Watch how you drive, arrive alive. Hug your wife, hug your kids, hug them tight when you say goodnight. With that, goodnight, Clark. Goodnight, Tommy. We'll see you on a rebound. Be safe, everybody.
Be safe.